fell right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder mayhem tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja.
Sometimes their cat, Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey, this is Nick Roth, and you're listening to Hillbilly Horror Stories.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 359 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
I'd like to wish all the fathers out there a happy Father's Day.
Amen. Happy Father's Day, you guys. You rock.
Yes, you do rock.
They do.
All right, so Tracy, obviously we want to start off thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks for all you guys, girls, and service animals for everything you do to keep us safe every day of the week.
That's true, and I hope you got to talk to your families today on Father's Day if you're serving, and hope you got to do that. Just know we're all thinking about you guys, praying for you every day. So keep up the great work. Thank you for keeping us safe.
Yeah, and I want to give a special Father's Day to Ron Tuttle and Jonathan Tuttle, who had to experience something none of us would ever wish, the loss of a child and grandchild earlier this week. I can't imagine what they're going through, and then to have Father's Day on top of it, it's going to be something that for the rest of their lives,
right,
they're not going to be able to celebrate without thinking of the tragedy. That
yeah, it's a very sad story. We love you guys so much. So, bad story.
Tracy, we always like to follow up the thinking of our military and civil servants with letting people know that if they're going through a hard time right now, for whatever the reasons are, please reach out and get help. There is no shame whatsoever in reaching out to friends or family members. Even if you think they're not interested in hearing your problems, that's your mind playing tricks on you. I guarantee you're wrong. You have friends and family member who care about you. And for some reason that you really don't, then there is a whole group of 6,000 people on Facebook that would love to have you as part of our family.
That is the truth. You guys can come to us anytime. Jerry and I always give our phone number out if you want to go that route. And like he said, the group is wonderful. We're so blessed to have them all part of our family. And if you don't want to go that route, you can call the crisis hotline at 988, and you can also text us 741-741.
Just please reach out to somebody if you're struggling.
Yes, please.
Tracy, we got a fun show tonight.
Okay.
We've got Sarah Val, medium. She's been on a couple of times before. Right. Some of you will remember Sarah was involved in a horrible fire that, you know, she was able to luckily survive and her kids survived. But, I mean, it's just one of those things that it's horrible. But we had a really fun conversation, so I can't wait for you guys to hear this.
Good.
Tracy, I was looking up a couple of stories. I'm trying to find some big, big name stories that maybe we haven't covered. And I've got a couple that I think we're going to do in the future, but sometimes I just stumble across stuff by accident.
Mm-hmm. And it's usually the best kind.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what happened this time. I found a bunch of lesser-known stories from the UK.
Okay.
Now, most of these that I ran across were really short, so I picked a couple of the bigger, longer ones, I should say. Mm-hmm. That's what she said. But I picked a couple of the longer ones out to do, and I think you guys will find these fascinating. So for these stories, there won't be a ton of history and stuff like we cover. It's just a bunch of personal accounts of a haunting at these particular locations.
All right.
And we'll do more of these in the future, because like I said, I found a bunch of them, but I only picked two for this particular episode. So I'm going to start off by saying that I had some actual confusion on this very first story. The story I saw listed this location as the Mazatro Heritage Air Museum in the hills of Snowdonia.
That's a mouthful.
That's in Wales.
Wales, okay.
Over in Great Britain. Now, when I tried to find further research on it to try to see if I could make a... That's what happens sometimes. I'll find a smaller story, mm-hmm. and then I'll keep researching it, and you'll find little bits and pieces mm-hmm. from different stories, and next thing you know, you've got a good long story.
Awesome.
Well, when I tried to do some further research on this one, I couldn't find anything under that name, the Mazatro Heritage Air Force.
Oh.
Or
so that museum. Didn't work out in your favor?
Nothing. No, it did not. But it's supposed to be an old Royal Air Force base in the UK. But what I did find out, I don't know if there's a connection, but there is a, I think it's Caernarfon Air World Aviation Museum, and it's in Snowdonia. And I assume that there was maybe a possible name change or something along the way, and maybe that's the same place, I'm not sure. I didn't see any other names listed, like in Wikipedia or something, mm-hmm. for this place. Plus, it only opened in 1988. So, I have no idea, but I'm still doesn't take away from the fact that the story's cool.
Okay.
You just may not know where to find it.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people are going to travel over there. So.
Well, some people actually live there.
Well, that's true. Oh, yeah. Duh. So,
it may surprise you to know that there are several people living in Great Britain.
Yeah, that's very true.
All right, but this one says, Mazatro was actually described as a graveyard of wartime relics, decaying bungalows, and underground bunkers. This was, like I said, it was all part of a thriving Air Force base for Allied pilots during World War II. The rotting military paraphernalia here is a creepy look into the past, but for others, there seems to be much more here than a bunch of old planes and bunkers.
Ooh. I'd like to see those, the old planes and bunkers and stuff.
Right, me too. So it's going to start off, we're going to start off with James Herron. Now, he had come to the area to visit his girlfriend, Lisa, who actually lived in one of the bungalows that was on the property.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these were actually still in use by people. We know it was on the site of a museum. They're in the house. Everything seems to be fine. It's a typical night. It's bedtime. They go into the small bedroom of the bungalow and they go to sleep. But James is awoken in the middle of the night, and he's startled to see that there is a man kneeling at the foot of his bed. He said that the man had a huge scar going down the side of his face, and his eyes were piercing. He said he slept with the lights on for the rest of the night.
Wow. Well, maybe he was just praying.
He's still a strange man in the room. It doesn't matter what he's doing. You don't give excuses for that. Now, this wouldn't be the only incident at the former airbase. One particular building at the base may harbor a dark secret. It's been described as a place of doom. Now, there's a constant feeling of being watched at all times when you're in this building. And there are many places in the building where the floor is still stained with blood from all the way back during the World War.
Man, that's hard to believe that can be like that after all those years. You think, it would fade away
in a lot of places.
Yeah.
They had that in Perryville.
Yeah.
Where most of the houses all have blood stains on the floors. And
wow.
A gentleman by the name of Carwin Roberts worked there for about 3 years at the museum. He said he didn't work in that particular building, but at the restaurant that it was at the bottom of the property. Sometimes he and the other employees would have to help out in other parts of the museum doing some maintenance work or odd jobs like painting or something like that. Mm-hmm. Everybody just kind of pitched in, pulled their weight. He was only 19 years old at this time, and he entered Mazatro's, what they called it, the decontamination chamber. He was just out of curiosity. He said it kind of looked spooky. He'd heard stories.
So he was going to check it out.
He wanted to go check it out. He knew there was a history of people feeling pushed and getting sick when they entered the building. Well, sometimes people even complained to be claustrophobic. He was in the middle of the building, just kind of checking out. He's by himself and decides to look down this long hallway. Now, he's using his flashlight. He's just looking all, kind of all around. He suddenly got a feeling as if he wasn't meant to be in the building. It felt like the building itself was trying to tell him to get out. Then he started to feel sick. But more than anything, he felt fear. But Carolyn wasn't the only one to have a terrifying experience inside the decontamination chamber. Sean Evans, he's a photographer, he had a frightening experience inside that building. He said that as a photographer, he's obviously been to many different types of interesting places. He was just kind of wandering around the center there. He was taking some pictures. It was nighttime. He said the whole place seemed kind of off. It just seemed eerie feeling. Mm-hmm. And he was snapping some pictures, but felt like that he was in a place that he shouldn't be in. Mm. That's almost the same thing as Carwin.
Yeah, kind of having a bad vibe.
Right. He got so scared that he was basically starting to run out of the building, and he really didn't know why.
Oh my gosh,
it was just all out of feeling. That's when he saw a man. According to Sean, he was definitely a military man. It was painfully obvious to Sean that if he didn't leave, something bad was going to happen. So he left.
I don't blame him. I've been out there too.
So the question is, could the history of the airbase shed some light on the possible haunting?
Mm-hmm.
Well, between 1939 and 1945, there were around 100 plane crashes on this base.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot.
Yeah, and dozens were fatal. But there was one crash in particular that stands out. On the 6th of April, 1942, six airmen took off from the base on a routine flight. Just minutes into the flight, a crew member radioed complaining of engine trouble. Seconds later, their Royal Air Force Wellington bomber smashed into the surrounding hills. All on board were killed.
It's a shame.
As the base mourned their deaths, a dilemma presented itself. Where were they going to keep the bodies?
Mm-hmm.
They laid them out in the decontamination chamber.
Well,
the story goes that you could see marks from the arms and the legs where the blood dripped onto the concrete of the building's floor.
Oh, man. That's so sad.
So there you go.
That's a very sad thing. I just feel so bad for all those people that fought, you know? It just really sucks, honestly.
I'm with you.
I mean, I cannot imagine. Well, I could get into a whole thing, but I won't. But God bless them.
Let's not do that.
Yeah. God bless them, though.
Are you ready for our second story?
Yeah.
How about a haunted daycare?
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to go to 1988. Pauline Imbrati decided, you know what? I've been working in daycares for my entire life. I think I know what the hell I'm doing. I'm going to take a step forward and I'm going to open my own daycare.
Good
for her.
And
that's what she did. It was a huge success right off the bat. But didn't take long for her to kind of wonder if the community center that housed her daycare was actually haunted.
Well, I mean, she probably would be able to tell with all those kids in there.
Right.
Because, you know, they can see stuff, so.
Oh, I was going to talk about they were all evil.
Oh.
And they all seem like little monsters, so how would you?
That is not true. Little kids are awesome.
One Monday evening, it was around 6:30 p.m., and she was in the office. She's all by herself. She started to hear some strange noises, like heavy metal doors mm-hmm. slamming.
Ooh.
Remember, she's by herself.
Mm-hmm.
So she starts to investigate. She sees one door slam on its own.
Oh, she watches it?
Yes, she watched the door slam from a distance.
Yep.
Now, she's a little petrified because she's like, how did that happen? Mm-hmm. There's no person there, but I watched the door slam.
Right.
There was nobody in the vision to be able to push it. But it's possible somebody could be in here. Maybe I just didn't see them. Mm-hmm. Maybe they grabbed it and pushed it real quick and got out of the way. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that was what she thought. Well, even more scary, she sees a set of double doors. They were shut and locked. They started to shake violently, as if someone was on the other side trying desperately to open them.
What in the world?
Well, here's the catch. You could see through the windows on each one of these doors, and it was obvious that there was no one on the other side of the doors, even though it was shaking violently.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been out there already.
It scared the hell out of her. So she calls her husband, who in turn came and he looked around. No one was there. Nothing was out of place. In the following weeks...
He said, you've been drinking.
Yeah. In the following weeks, reports of mysterious events increased. And when the children were there, nothing really happened. Except on one occasion. And you're going to love this story. So one of the teachers was in the one of the daycare rooms, nursery rooms, as they call them over in Great Britain. A child got his teacher's attention by pointing to a small car. This is one of those, like, the little Fisher-Price cars that are made for, like, two-year-olds to get in, and you can kind of push them around. But they're made out of the real heavy-duty plastic and stuff like that. Well, it was one of those little cars, and it was rolling across the floor all on its own.
Oh, shoot, there wasn't nobody in it.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, to think this was odd enough for a two-year-old to point it out and like, this probably shouldn't be happening.
Yeah.
They already knew. So, with everything else going on, then this happens. They really start to get worried. They even started calling the police out of concern. How do you think that went over?
Yeah.
Police officer P.C. Duran, he had heard many stories in his 30 years on the force. And when he first came to the daycare and he heard these stories, he felt they were complete BS, as you could imagine. He was pretty much convinced that ghosts do not exist. So PC Duran was still sympathetic to what was going on. He's trying to be concerned.
I mean, did he say, like, give an excuse? Like, oh, no, it was probably this or that. Or did he just kind of just wrote it off?
I'm sure he probably just kind of wrote it off. But he went about doing an investigation as diligently as possible. He even felt like, you know what? Pauline may be a little off her rocker.
Oh, no.
He decided, though, to organize a charity ghost watch.
Oh.
He figured that, you know what? We'll get a few laughs out of it. We'll get the kids some videos to watch. So he wasn't taking it entirely seriously. He brought in a paranormal investigator by the name of John Spencer. Now, Spencer had investigated over 100 cases. At this point, he had a good reputation for that kind of thing in the area. After making sure the building was completely secure, P.C. Duran positioned himself in the upstairs hall. John Spencer went down to the basement, and they were the only two people in the facility. Spencer said that there was a sense of closeness to the darkness. He was getting a little claustrophobic, which he had never had happen before. P.C. Duran, on the other hand, made his way to the cafeteria area. And then he heard the sound of weight training equipment downstairs, especially the sound of like dumbbells and such, slamming to the floor as if they'd been picked up and dropped.
Yeah, he's got a strong ghost. A workout ghost.
The experienced police officer was frightened to the point that he knew they were the only two in the place, and he could feel chills going up and down his spine. Now, at about 1:30 a.m., there was a low ticking noise. John Spencer said that he began to feel uncomfortable in his own skin. Now, this is a guy with experience in doing this. So now you got this low ticking sound that's starting to move all around the room. Now, at this point, both of them are together now.
They are? Okay, good.
They're in the, well, because the P.C. Duran came downstairs to check out and see what the noise was. So now they're in the gym-type area. The punching bag, you know, the big long ones that hang from the ceiling? Mm-hmm. It starts swaying back and forth, and then it starts doing, like, rotating in circles. as if someone was literally holding it and moving it all around.
So did they see the dumbbells on the floor?
I don't know if they saw the dumbbells or not, but this definitely took precedent when I start seeing this thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The two men weren't sure exactly what was going to happen next. PC Duran said that the lights then came on in a room that he had previously turned off and locked the door to the room.
Mm-hmm.
The door's locked and the lights come on with nobody in there. At this point, he said he was scared to death. And as a police officer, his natural instinct was to get answers. So the next day, he started to research the area around the daycare. Pauline, on the other hand, she still had to deal with all this crap and strange occurrences every day at work.
Yeah.
Well, they're only going to get worse. As Officer Duran is looking for, you know, logical explanations and trying to research, things are one thing after another are starting to happen at the daycare.
So was he like going to her and saying, okay, you might have something, you probably did hear
this.
Oh,
I think she knew, but okay. She still wouldn't get any answers she wanted. So one night after the kids had all gone home, Pauline was putting away some things, tidying up, when she saw this huge black shadowy mass. She said she focused on it. She couldn't see past it. It was just pure black.
That's scary.
She said it was an almost evil feeling. She felt that this could engulf her entire body. So she turned around and ran away as fast as possible. Her fear caused her to take drastic actions.
What'd she do?
She pulled out an Ouija board.
Oh, no, she did not.
Her and one of her co-workers asked if anyone was there, and it said yes.
Oh.
There was somebody there.
Well, good.
Now, here is where it gets fun. Officer Duran was finding out some answers on a more conventional effort. He was looking through some old newspapers, and he found one that showed that a woman had been stabbed to death on April 18th, 1977. She was killed by her husband. So Pauline and her co-worker at this time, I'm not going to say the exact same time, but I'm saying she hasn't heard back from Officer Duran about what he's found out yet.
Okay.
What she finds out through the Ouija board is pretty much the same answers. They asked how the person died, and the board responded with murder. They asked how the murder occurred, and the board said knife. At that time, Pauline, like I said, did not know the results of Officer Duran's search. All the activity stopped in the daycare right after the Ouija board session.
No kidding.
So I guess once they found out what happened, I got questions, obviously. I don't understand if it was an evil entity, why the entity would have stopped, because she saw the black mass.
Mm-hmm.
She said it felt evil. But now, if it was the husband that had killed her that was there, I don't understand why that would have fixed the problem. But if it was just the wife who wanted people to know, well, that was in the newspaper. People already knew.
I was going to say, did they find out it was her husband?
Yeah, the husband did it. So I don't know what the entity actually was and why it would stop after finding out what the situation was.
Good question. I don't know either.
There you go.
Wow. That's crazy. So did she keep the daycare, I guess?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, because everything got fixed.
Yeah,
you wouldn't want to quit after that.
Yeah. Good.
All right, guys. That wraps up that story. Now we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and then we'll be back to tell you a few updated things. And then we're going to listen to Sarah Val. All right. First and foremost, we have our new puppy. And we couldn't be more thrilled. It's definitely not a replacement for Ninja, but it definitely brings some happiness to this house that's been lacking for several months now.
I agree. I mean, she's so little bitty. It's so funny to see.
Yeah, she weighs about a pound.
Yeah. But she is wound up today.
Yeah, she's all over the place. If you're on our Facebook, I'll have Tracy post some of this stuff to the group, but we got a bunch of video of her. We actually got her first bark.
Yeah.
On video.
It's so cute.
We've been waiting for 2 days to hear a bark. She's made a complete mess of the floor. I'm seeing I'm going to have to be vacuuming like nonstop.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's still chowing down, too.
But she's got tons of energy.
Yeah, so she's a sweetheart.
Thanks to everybody who has seen the pictures and responded.
Yeah.
I don't know how much noise she's going to make. She's not a snorer as of yet, but Ninja wasn't either for the first couple of years.
Right.
But she probably will be, but I wouldn't expect to hear much over the next couple of years.
We will see.
All right. Couple of updates on shows. The Buffalo show is coming up. We are like 28 days away. Still obviously have tickets available for that one. Us, Brohio, Tyler Allen as a special guest from Minds of Madness, and Justin Rimmel. It's going to be a fun show. Come on out. Check out the Niagara Falls. We're excited about that part.
We are.
And then I'm trying to find out some good restaurants. I was trying to talk to Tessa Groff and Daniel Clace earlier.
Okay. That'd be fun to do.
Because they both live in the area, so they'll know.
Yeah. It'd be nice. We could like all get together for dinner or something.
That
maybe.
Would be nice.
Yeah.
That would be nice. We'll see if that can happen. But yeah, so get tickets for that. And then right afterwards, a month later, we have the Detroit show.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, I've never been there, so I'm excited.
Yeah, I've never been to Michigan, period. I've been close, but not to actual Michigan.
Yeah.
But
I don't
we
think
can't,
I have either.
Can't wait to do that. The show that we just drastically scheduled so quickly last week, Hillbilly Horror Stories and Justin Rimmel, Mysterious Circumstances at the Bell Mansion. Those tickets have sold like hotcakes.
I know.
There was only 50 to begin with, and I think we've sold 14 already. But for that being the first week, that's actually really strong on ticket sales.
Yeah. So we're excited about that show, too.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Hope you guys can make it out.
So just keep in mind, that one actually is a tour. It's the live event, a meet and greet, and an investigation from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. of the historic and very haunted Bell Mansion that used to be a funeral home for like 93 years. So can't wait to do that. And then there's only like 20 tickets left for us in the confessional show in Gatlinburg.
Yeah.
So you want to snatch those tickets as quick as possible.
That's very true. Going to be a fun time there as well.
Don't forget about the cruise.
Oh my gosh. So I wish it was here already.
I know. So don't forget about the cruise. Go join hillbillyhorrorstories.com. You can get tickets for all those shows, and you can get information about the cruise, including the phone numbers for Robin up at Vacation Experts. So, all right. What else we got to cover? That was a lip smack.
I know. Sorry.
I think that might be all we've got as far as the housekeeping and stuff. Go ahead and talk about what we had as far as iTunes reviews.
We have Mojo Lobster. He never lets us down every week. God bless him. Sam Farrell, Jason B, Furdog 71, Sharon from Australia. Thank you for your review. And I don't know how to say this one. Conriocht. What do you think?
I didn't hear the complete spelling.
Oh, Conriocht.
Is that all one word, or is con a separate word?
No, it's one word and 117.
Okay.
I knew I was going to mess it up, honey, and I'm so, so sorry. But thank you guys for your reviews. You all really came through this week, and we love them. We can't get enough of them. So we just appreciate y'all taking your time to do that. So.
Yes, and please, if you want to help out the show, reviews are the easiest way to do it.
Yeah. Very easy way to do that, and like I said, much appreciated.
Yes, absolutely. All right, let's listen to... I want to say this while we're on reviews and stuff. For everybody who's listened to my new podcast with Amanda, Wickedly Weird, you guys are amazing. It's got way more listens than we thought we were going to get because we had lost a lot of our subscribers because it had been a year since we've done anything.
Right.
So we're trying to build that back up. And we've already gotten some fantastic reviews on it. People like the new format. I'm just going to say, if you go listen, don't listen to anything but the last two episodes.
Why?
Because we've got still all the old warning episodes up, and it's night and day difference.
Yeah.
But if you just like good stories that's probably, I'd say, PG rated, but really cool stories that have strange twists, go listen to those. But just listen to the, I've got them labeled WW1, WW2.
Okay.
And those aren't wars. So those are
wickedly
weird one and two.
Yeah.
But go listen and spread the word for us. We'd appreciate it.
Thank you guys for that.
All right, let's listen to Sarah Val. Hey guys, it has been a while since we've had this special guest on. I believe that she has been on twice before. But we have medium Sarah Val on. Sarah, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
So, Sarah, you've got, obviously, you've told some stories on the show in the past that were, and some very personal stories about a fire that you were in and narrowly escaped. And it was a very heartwarming and emotional story. And that's something that always stands out from your past visits. But for those of listening that may not have heard those episodes, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Sarah, and I'm a 38-year-old mother to four wonderful children. I am a psychic medium, a direct connect reader. I'm a certified yoga teacher. I'm a minister. I love to travel. I'm a lover of Lake Huron in Michigan. I've also recently been in a magazine, Lipstick Magazine, as a published model. Photographer by passion. I'm a fire survivor, like you mentioned. An NPD survivor, that's narcissistic personality disorder. That's a whole nother show. I'm a lover of all things vintage fashion. I like to play the piano, write poetry. I've been told I'm a very highly sensitive and empathetic person, and that recently been told I have a bleeding heart and I wear my heart on my sleeve, and I'm just a hippie at heart. So,
so it sounds like you have a lot of free time.
Yeah, well, sometimes when my kids are at school, when they're at school, but now summertime is here. So that should be interesting.
So tell me a little bit about, what's some things that have happened recently that you can share that we might not have talked about on the other shows?
Yeah. So a few things have happened. Unfortunately, last July, July 28th of 2022, my best friend passed away. Her name was Janice. She was 40, a mother to three beautiful children. Yeah, super sad. So that was my brother's girlfriend. And at her funeral, her friend Sarah was speaking about her, and she had mentioned that she had heard chimes in her living room, as well as seeing like a white light come through her living room after her passing. And she just, believes that that was a sign from her. Of course, that was really touching to hear that. I believe in the afterlife for sure, just being a medium. And so I had the same experience as her. I was laying on my bed and a bright white light flashed outside my glass door. It almost looked like an orb, and it caught my attention, and followed by the sounds of chimes ringing, which was the exact thing that the other Sarah had mentioned, that she had experienced. So it was just very heartwarming. It was definitely just a sign from her, that she's here, she's around. I do have some of her ashes as well in the house, and I do feel her presence. I guess she has also come to visit her mother, Carol. She touched her shoulder not too long ago when she was sitting in the living room. And she's also come to visit my brother several times. One in particular, he saw like a white, blue kind of flash come down from the ceiling and end up right in front of his face. He said it was almost like a shooting star. And he said he felt the pressure of her kiss him on the lips. And that story was pretty amazing. He said he's also seen her literally sit down at the end of the bed and relay messages to him, have conversations. I believe that my brother has abilities too to connect with the afterlife, because when our mother passed, she came to him in full color and literally floated down and just laid next to him. He saw her, he felt her. She was peaceful, beautiful. Those were the feelings that he associated with that event. So that was definitely just a good reminder, that they're still around. So, yeah.
Let me ask you a question based on how you perceive spirits, entities, however you want to, energies, however you want to term it.
Do you always see them as a person? Or, I mean, obviously not just judging by the story you just told, but how often is it more of a light and energy source, but you know who the person is?
So light versus actually seeing them as a human or as
Correct.
a person. Wow, that's a good question. Honestly, I see more as a human as a person. I
I
do.
think that's,
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think that's probably more the case, but I guess that leads me to the next question. It's a conversation I was having with Tracy the other night. But I've heard people say that when you come back, when you make yourself visible to others in the afterlife, that a lot of times it's how you felt your best as a person. So you might have passed away when you were 75, but you might show yourself as your 40-year-old self or your 25-year-old self when others see you. What has been your experiences when you see people, or do you think that's just mixed up depending on the person?
That's a great question. So they say that when someone passes away and they come in spirit form, that it's usually in the prime of their life. So if the person passed when they're 75, you're going to actually view them, let's say, 30s or 40s or midlife or whatever. For me, I see them at the age that they went. I see them exactly, how they were. However, I always see them in a very peaceful, happier life. Like they're blemish free. Like let's say they had scars or tattoos or whatever. It's purity, if that makes sense. I see them in this pure form, but I do see them, yes, at the age, always, anytime I've read people in the past or just with my family's experience that they are at the age that they went, yeah.
Because it's interesting, like you'll hear with these traumatic situations, like we're covering a story on the St. James Palace in London, and the story there is about a gentleman that was one of the servants there that was killed, and he was his neck was almost cut off. It was sliced throat. But they say the ghost that when people see him now, that's always how they see him, with his throat sliced and bloody and beat up. So, you hear stories like that often, though, where people met a traumatic death, and then that's how they're seen in the afterlife. So it just, it's kind of curious, depending on maybe the situation might make a difference.
I agree with that. I think you're right. Maybe with the traumatic experience, yes, because like when I do read people, I do see like what happened to them, like people that have been in like car accidents and stuff. Like I'll actually play out because I am a direct connect reader or a remote viewer, which means I see like objects. I see the car. I see the person injured. Like, I see the surroundings and the grass and the trees and all that. So absolutely, I'll see how they go, but they don't come to me damaged anymore, if that makes sense. They just come to me, if you believe in heaven or hell, that's to each his own. But I do. I believe in heaven. I believe in God, and I think that that's just all washed away, and we're purified, and so that's how I see them. I don't see them mangled or hurt anymore because they've passed on. They're coming to me now. They're passed on and they're relaying messages. Almost always spirit will tell me I'm in heaven, or they'll say I'm at peace. This is real. This is real where I'm at. Believe. Those are messages that come to me often. Yeah. So I guess it does depend totally on the situation. But yes, you will get it for me a little bit of both. I will see them and how they, went with, with the blood, like you said, and all that, and how they went. But then when they're just, it's a quick glimpse of they're showing me how they went, but now here they are, and they're in that healed state. So
I guess theoretically, people seeing like the entities we talked about at the palace, maybe those might not even be actual spirits. They could be more of a residual energy or something that, is replaying a horrible incident and not the person at all.
that's true.
Let me ask you one other thing that you brought up that is just something that I'm curious about, and you may not have a true answer for it, so it might just be more of an opinion thing. But you had brought up your friend that passed having some of her ashes. And what that made me think about is I'm actually looking at pre-need funeral stuff now. And, you know, cremation is something that's always been brought up. It's something in the past, probably 20 years ago, I never would have considered. And now it's something I do consider. But, you know, when it comes to burial, whether it be burial, whether it be cremation, there are a lot of different religions that, like, for example, you know, some religions, cremation is not something they would even consider. It's just something it's against their belief system. In other religions, you know, that's the only way to do it. You know, I guess I'm kind of torn, not from a religious reason, but overall, judging, you know, you talk to people, obviously, that have passed on, does the burial method or cremation or whatever happens to the body after death, do you think that makes a difference at all in the grand scheme of things? Not according to somebody's religion, because I'm not trying to criticize anybody's religion, but in the grand scheme of things, do you think that makes any type of difference at all in the afterlife?
No, sir. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. That's what's going to happen. If you're buried, you're going to become ashes. Once you go, your spirit's lifted up and you're free. You're in the afterworld. So no, I do not think that matters. No, because and that's personal experience. My friend that passed that we're speaking of, she was cremated, and she was there in spirit within a couple of days, already reaching out to, like we mentioned, her friend Sarah, me, my brother, her mother. So no, that doesn't matter. Mm-mm. Not in my opinion, no. What do you think?
I mean, I wouldn't think that it would, because I'm a big believer that as soon as you die, your spirit, your energy goes on to wherever it's going, and it's no longer in the body. So right. I wouldn't think it would matter. Like I said, I guess the thought, and I'm, you know, I guess the thought of just your body being incinerated just seems very harsh at times. I guess no more harsh than being put in the ground, but I guess, you know, when you're thinking about being in the vault and the casket and all that, it just seems like it's, you know, a different way of doing it. It seems like a cremation almost seems like, oh, let's just hurry up, get this done, you know, as opposed to,
yeah,
you know, so I think that's, you know, but in the end, I don't think it really matters. But at one time, I think I probably would have, you know, we lost our dog 10 weeks ago, and we had him cremated. And honestly, as silly as this is going to sound, that honestly almost made me change my thoughts about being cremated, because I hated the thought of his little body being burned up.
That's what I thought.
I'm like, I don't know if I want my family to think of me like that. You know, I guess I never really thought that they would have those emotions about it, but I had those emotions. So maybe it's something I need to rethink. But, it's weird.
It's cool you bring that up, because I think the same thing as far as, like, you know, myself. I don't want to be burned. You know, I know what you mean. Like, I don't want to be burned, but you know what's crazy? I really don't want to be buried either. I've always had this weird, I guess you could call it a fear, which it doesn't need to be a fear, but, and I'm sure there's other people out there like me, but being like trapped, being buried, like I feel like an enclosed, you know what I mean? Like trapped, even though I'm passed on and my spirit is gone, it's like, would I rather be trapped like that or rather be burned? It all sounds so, it does, it sounds scary. And I don't know, you know, I guess it doesn't matter, like we mentioned before, because, you know, we don't feel anymore. They say we don't feel anymore. So we shouldn't really matter how that happens, but I totally understand. I totally understand.
I guess for me, I don't worry about how it would feel for me, because I don't feel like any of that would matter as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, you always hear that funerals are not for the dead, they're for the living. Yes. It's their chance to be able to say goodbye. And that is part of the funeral process. You know, it's, you know, the grieving process. You know, I guess I don't want to add one extra thing to somebody to sit and worry about. But at the same time, you know, I've heard my wife say when her father passed away, it was, you know, a couple weeks later. And I mean, it was this nasty, rainy day. And she's, you know, I can't stand to think about my dad being in that ground with all this. And so, I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter what happens. You're still not going to like the thought of wherever they are.
True. No matter what, it's sad. It's, you know, it's life and death, and there's nothing that we can do about it. I've actually thought about how it would be better to, like, what's it called? A mausoleum?
Yes.
Where you're Right. Where you're not underground, but in a mausoleum. Something like that kind of makes me feel a little better. Like, not underground. And so I don't know. But like you said,
in New Orleans, they have the family plots because everything's above ground there because of the sea level. And when we were taking a tour of one of the cemeteries there, they were telling us that they will put someone in there, but because of the heat, it basically turns the bodies into nothing in like a year. So they, you know, once somebody's been in there for a year, they can just open it up and put another family member in there, and whatever's left just falls to the bottom. And I thought, well, that just sounds like the most horrible thing in the world as far as our plan, but that's the way it is. And if somebody dies within that year, they have like holding other parts of the mausoleum that are there, like a holding pattern that they put you in until it's time to put you in the family plot. So it's just, I don't know. I guess everybody's got different ways of doing stuff based on what the environment is, but it's weird to think about.
It is weird to think about. I agree. I think what it boils down to is it's really easy to think about stuff like that, you know, but I've realized that try not in life to consume yourself with any thought, you know, because it's like we need to live in the now. It's so easy to worry and it's so easy to stress about things. It's like that it actually is stealing your current joy. This is what all we have right now is the now, you know. We don't want to be worried and miserable up until the time that we do go, you know. So I've definitely learned that myself, you know, a lot. Everything is mindset. So
yeah, you know, it's funny you said that, because I mean, I've had some recent health problems. My heart is not in the greatest of shape. It's operating at about 23% per my last doctor visit. And you know, I talked to my cardiologist and I, you know, I'm trying to do all the right things. I want to try to live as long as I can and be there for family. And, you know, when he told me, you know, hey, it's only working at 23%. And I said, well, what is there anything, you know, is there any shot that it'll get better? And he just said, no, it's not going to get any better. That's it is what it is. We can try to keep it there as long as we can. So I said, you know, was there anything that I shouldn't be doing? Anything I need to stay away from? And I probably, I guess I was surprised by the answer, because he basically shrugged his shoulders and he looked at me and said, just live your life, which is not the most comforting thing to say, because it basically was his way of saying, dude, it don't matter what you do. You know, it's, you know, it is what it is at this point. But at the same time, I felt like, you know what? That's pretty good advice, you know? So
I saw your post, Jerry. I saw you were struggling with heart problems a while back, and I just really, my heart went out to you on all that. And that's a hard thing, you know, to deal with. You went through surgery, right? made it through a surgery or two?
I went through, I had a surgery 7 years ago. This time I just had it was supposed to just been a heart cath, simple procedure, 0.5% chance that anything would go wrong. And I actually flatlined on the table for 2 minutes and they had to do CPR and they broke about 4 ribs in that process. And my sternum was damaged. So I went through about 4 or 5 weeks of just recovering from the ribs. And, you know, anytime you have a heart situation, you have zero energy because I'd had a heart attack, which caused all that fluid on the heart and stuff like that. So that's what I'm working on, is trying to keep fluid off my heart. So I have several medications every day and all that. But now I found out a couple of weeks ago that I'm going in on the 19th of July to have a defibrillator put in. Because apparently when you have a heart as weak as I did, as they explained it, any kind of bad rhythm change can just make you drop dead. And this thing will be a safety net. So they said it could never go off or it could save your life. So it's something that's probably best to have, because when your heart's as weak as what mine is, it doesn't take much just for it to just be done. So that's the plan as of right now. But you know what? I'm just taking the doctor's advice. We're just living life. I've not changed anything. I'm taking it easy on a physical standpoint where, you know, I'm not overexerting myself, but I'm still doing what I can do. You know, we get through with this interview, I'm getting ready to go out and clean my garage and move a bunch of boxes and stuff around, because, you know, I would rather, I want to live.
You want to live.
I would rather just do what I do. And if it happens, it happens, rather than just walking on eggshells for the rest of my life.
Exactly. Yep. There was a post I had made on Facebook a while back. I was on a lake here on in Michigan and there was some music to it, but it was basically said something, you know, at the end about live like you were dying. And that's a song, you know, that we can, you know, let go of all of the junk and the pain in the past and just live like you're dying, you know, because we're all dying. We are.
It's so funny that you brought that up, because, and you know, maybe it's something you know just means a lot to a lot of people, but and you might have honed in on that. But you know, Tracy and I had a friend who passed away, I guess it's probably been about 7 or 8 years ago now, and he had cancer. He knew he was on his last couple of days. And his brother is a really well-known musician around town, travels around the country. And he actually sat down with a karaoke machine and he sang that song, the Tim McGraw song, Live Like You Were Dying. Mm-hmm. And he broke up a few times in it. But I'm telling you, that video is one of the most emotional things that you would ever see. And yes, it's inspirational to know that this guy knew he had a couple of days.
And, right.
You know, he was able to put those words out there. And so that's something that I've thought about many times over the years, is him doing that song. So it's interesting that you brought that up.
Absolutely. I saw a post the other day on Facebook of a girl. It was something that was shared through a feed, and she was 28, Jerry. And she was, she's like, I figured I'd make this post. She's like, I have about 30 days left to live. She's like, and I just kind of wanted to write down some of my observations of being, you know, the girl dying in her bed at 28 of cancer, of what's important and what's not, and what she really wanted to remind people of. And the stuff that she listed was just so heartwarming and true, you know, about not worrying about the little stuff, and it's all small stuff. You know, they say that quote, don't worry about the small stuff and it's all small stuff. You know, even though something might be hard to handle or big, everything is how we, you know, handle it and how we address it. And she was just talking about, don't worry about other people, what they think of you and the drama, and go out and help a stranger. And just, she listed all this wonderful stuff. And at the end, she's like, until we see each other again. And I guess she passed away 24 hours after making that post, you know, and It does. It makes you sit back. I really try every morning to sit in gratitude or have a gratitude journal and just be like, you know, don't focus on the stuff that's hard or rough or tough. Enjoy your kids' smiles, the sunshine coming in through my window in the morning. I have these beautiful yellow curtains, and for some reason, the yellow just radiates this beautiful morning sun, and just, you know, a hot cup of tea or coffee with someone you love, and, you know, really connecting, looking at them in their eyes and putting your phone down, you know, holding their hands, and just the little things, you know. Before my mother passed away, she had sent me a card, and on the front of the card was a tree in the middle of nowhere, all alone. And the inside said, "The best things in life aren't things." And it was just a very, I have a few tattoos. I was thinking about maybe getting that one because it was the last card I received from her. But it's so true. You know, the best things in life aren't things. When we go, you know, are we taking the Mercedes with us? Are we taking the mansion? Are we taking all the money and all of the fame and fortune and the nice clothing and the best jewelry and whatever? We don't take any of that with us. We take those moments and those memories. So, yeah.
It's and it's, I don't think that could be any more true, because, you know, I think about the things that make me happiest in life. And, you know, going to a place like the Smoky Mountains and just standing next to the creek and just sitting out there and listening and just watching. And, you know, I don't think I could pay for anything that makes me more happy than something that I can get from this $100 a night hotel room that sits on the creek and just sitting out there. I mean, it's just like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, yeah, so there's something. Nature is a big thing for me. So, I mean, I just, you know, I love being at the beach or being, you know, at next to the river or the lake, or, you know, bodies of water to me are the ultimate as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't matter what kind of water it is. I just absolutely love it. And, you know, like you said, most of those things are absolutely free.
They're free. Yep. You could not have any money and just, you know, last year, I traveled to 12 states on my own, all by myself. Something kicked in, you know, with just life and things I had going on. I was like, I said, you know, I got a couple $100 in my pocket. I'm just going to go. And I just started traveling, you know, looking up like just cheap Airbnbs or wherever I could land. And that's where I've done so much growth as a human, you know, over these last couple of years, just going on those trips, driving, you know, leaving at 4 or 5 a.m. and just watching the sunrise as I'm going into this new place, not really knowing exactly where I'm going, but just knowing I'm going somewhere that's gonna heal my soul. I don't care about anything else. Like, that's kind of been my go-to, just really trying to travel. I didn't travel for 18 years. I became a mom when I was 18. I stayed home with my kids and I just raised them. And I realized that I had not left the state in 18 years. And that was a couple of years ago. I went to Chicago and I decided to go see something on my bucket list, which was the Home Alone house. And that's when it all started for me. Just something I wanted to do, but that's when it all started for me. I'm like, all right, like, you can do this, you know. Like, I had a little bit of anxiety, you know, driving and stuff like that. And, you know, when you haven't gone somewhere for so long, but I faced so many obstacles and fears and found some pretty cool places to go. Actually, I went and visited some famous graves of some people. I went and saw Muhammad Ali on his birthday. And nice. I posted about that on Facebook. And I actually, since I can connect with people who have crossed over, I thought, you know, I'm going to try to connect with Muhammad Ali. And I just sat there and the sun was just shining down and he's got a beautiful plot and there's like a bench and there's beautiful flowers and stuff. And I was like, you know, talk to me, like, give me your advice. Like, do you have any advice for me? Like, just come through me. And he said, be strong. I felt it. And I believe this wholeheartedly that it was him, because he was such a strong man. You know, he's just like, be strong, don't give up, be strong, don't give up, you know, strength lies from within. you know, and that was just, that was amazing to be able to experience that with him. And then I went and I saw Johnny and June Carter Cash. That was amazing. And I did the same thing. I just, people think, you know, they're like, oh, you're crazy. You sit, I will go and I will sit on top of a grave and just try to connect with them. And Johnny and June Carter Cash, they have an amazing little plot as well and a bench and everything. And I just, I tried to kind of get like a connection with them as well. And it was kind of all the same thing. Like they were such strong, powerful people, but they all, you know, they've been through, you know, crap just like us. And I just, I got these messages from all these different places. I went to Madonna's mother's grave in Michigan. We actually, my daughter and I, my 7 year, well, she was 7 at the time. We went in a snowstorm to try to find Madonna's mother's grave. And there was literally like 2 foot of snow. I'm not kidding you. It took me over 2 hours. We didn't know where we were going. I says, Lily, we are going to kick the snow off of all these graves until we find it. We went up and down, up and down. It was the very last one. And it was a lesson to her. I said, this is what happens when you don't give up and you keep trying, you find it. And we were able to clear it off and we got pictures and stuff. And so it's just, it's been fun. It's been a cool thing to do. And it's something I enjoy. And, you know, just teaching the kids, like I teach my children that, like, I want them to know, like, I might not be here tomorrow, but I want you to know, like, I will always be here in spirit. Like, don't ever be afraid if mommy leaves. Cause that's something as, you know, a single mother, like we fear, you know, leaving our children and not knowing, you know, like, will they be okay? So they've kind of, they know what mommy does with the mediumship and everything. Actually, my daughter heard me give a reading for the first time the other day to my dad's girlfriend whose son passed away when he was young. It was the first time reading her and we were eating dinner. And I felt like I seen his, the spirit of him standing next to her. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't mean to like scare you or anything, but do you mind if I just kind of tell you what's coming through? Everything I told her was just exactly to the T, and it brought tears to her eyes and my dad's eyes. And they were just in shock. Like, you know, her son was talking about like a bench, you know, that was significant to him. He just kept saying like the bench, and my dad just, you know, his jaw dropped. He's like, I just brought his bench and put it in the backyard, like stuff that I wouldn't have known. He actually kept telling me Kentucky, Kentucky. And I was like, something about Kentucky, but I'm very confident in my reading. So I just kept saying like, what is Kentucky? Well, it took her a couple of minutes and she realized that that was his last trip he took with his friends was to Kentucky. And it was just all of this information coming in and I just relayed it to her. And it was just all, she said it was just all completely accurate. And she became like a believer, you know, and I feel blessed to be able to help people. Like I want to be able to, because I would want that for me. You know, I try to treat people the way I would want to be treated. And if somebody could connect with my mom, you know, like I've never had a reading on my mother, you know, that would be amazing. My mom has come to me, you know, in dreams and stuff, but to have like another medium read her, you know, would be pretty cool. So I just, I know that gift. So.
Yeah, it's a very cool story. And you know, I love that you brought up the Muhammad Ali. That's I'm from Louisville, so he's a hometown hero. Yeah. And his plot in Cave Hill Cemetery is awesome. The whole cemetery there is awesome. Of course, Colonel Sanders is also buried there, and several other famous people. Yeah, did you not know that?
I did not know that. I literally will go to like a state or a city and be like, famous people buried in Louisville, and then I'll just go, you know. And he was the one that kind of just, you know, I get drawn to, you know, a certain person or whatever, but yeah, I went to him. But no, I did not know about Colonel Sanders.
I think that's Zachary cool. Taylor, the former president, is also buried there too. And okay, you know, there was all kinds of stories around him because they had to exhume his body, I guess, in the last 15 years or something, because they were trying to debate whether he was poisoned or not. And it was there was a TV show on it. So they went in and exhumed his body and were testing for poison and all that. So yeah, there's a lot of famous people buried in Cave Hill Cemetery.
Nice. Pretty cool.
You remind You remind me of a friend we have named Sarah who also lives in Michigan. She travels and does along her trips. She stops at various cemeteries along the way because she's fascinated by that. And when she came to Lexington, not this last time, but the time before, there was a horse cemetery that she had heard about. And I randomly took her to a park by our house. And in this park is where this horse cemetery is. And she was amazed. She was like, when I said, hey, there's a horse cemetery, she's like, oh, I've heard all about it. I've read about it. I'm like, what are the odds of that? You know, it just was so random, but you know.
That is, yeah. You know, that's funny you just brought that up, Jerry. That's funny you just brought that up regarding the horse, because I was going to kind of tell you a little story. Some kind of a cool spiritual thing recently happened with a important person in my life. I was on my way to go visit him, and something told me to stop at a garage sale along the way. Well, anyone who knows me knows I love garage sales, thrifting, like a good find, but I was kind of drawn to it and I was trying to get there, but I was like, just stop real quick. You'll find something. Well, after looking around, I saw an old belt buckle. And he told me that he, you know, collects these belt buckles, like, you know, cool ones. And I said, you know what? I'm kind of drawn to this. I didn't really take, you know, a super good look at it. It had like a horse on the front, and I was like, okay, cool. Well, I'll buy it. And upon arriving at his house and presenting it to him, he, you know, put on his glasses and he immediately said, crazy horse. And his eyes teared up and he removed his glasses. And he explained to me that he had just that very morning before me arriving, woke up and decided, which he doesn't always do, just kind of an impromptu thing, he decided to pray to Crazy Horse and the Medicine Man, as these are strong spiritual warriors that he believes in. And I was in shock and I just hugged him. And I'm thinking, how often in life does an experience like this happen? I had no idea what he had prayed about that morning. And to bring him a vintage belt buckle with Crazy Horse on the front, as well as a Crazy Horse saying on the back, truly solidified like our connection and relationship together. And we talk about that a lot, like how crazy, literally, right? Literally. So pretty cool story.
Well, Sarah, it has been absolutely awesome having you on here. I had no idea where this conversation was going to go, but I love where it went.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on, Barry. I always love talking to you.
Well, then the same here. Tell everybody if they wanted to get a reading from you, what they would do.
Absolutely. So you guys can just go onto my regular Facebook page. It's just Sarah Val, V-A-L. I'm trying to think what my profile picture. I think I just profile picture of me standing there. It's got like a tan shirt or dress on. I did have
and that's
a
Sarah with an H.
Yep, Sarah with an H. Yep, S-A-R-A-H. And then you got a space there and then Val, V-A-L. And you can just private message me on there. And we can, yeah, I can, you know, set you up. Like if you guys want to mention this show, I'll give a discount. So yeah, I would love to connect.
Awesome. And I can vouch for Sarah. She does very good work. We've had a lot of listeners in the past go to her and they've all been very pleased with the readings they got. So I will definitely vouch for you.
Thank you so much, Jerry.
Sarah, it's good seeing you. Hopefully I can see you at the Michigan show in late August.
Yep. I'll follow you and see when it is. And I would love to connect. So that'd be great.
All right. Later on.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
All right, guys, that wraps it up for us this week. We appreciate it. We love all you guys, and we hope you have a good week.
Yeah, have a blessed week, everybody.